Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome to America This Week. I'm Patty Gilger. You're welcome here to join us for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I'm joined by Eric Sundrup.
And I'm filling in for Carrie Weber. And each week, as we've said many times, we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered here by the team at America Magazine.
In addition to Father Sundrup, who is one of our associate editors, I'm pleased to be joined by J.D. Long-Garcia, a senior editor. Welcome, J.D.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much. Again, I'm Patty Gilger, consulting editor, sitting in for Father Matt Malone. Pleasure to be here with you as we talk about a smart Catholic take on faith and culture from America This Week. We're going to be talking to Simca Fisher about how the church can help or hurt women in abusive marriages, a very serious topic. Simca, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for joining us, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name immediately before introducing you.
Yeah, it's never happened before, believe me.
Yeah, to me either. So you've written a really lovely article for me, and I mean that in terms of telling the stories of some of these women, the challenges they've faced. The article is titled, How the Church Can Help or Hurt Women in Abusive Marriages. You can find this, as you can find all of the pieces today, on americamagazine.org/serious. Simca, would you tell us a bit about the piece that you've written?
Yeah, I wanted to write a piece about how the church responds, specifically how priests respond to women who are in abusive marriages, how the actual meeting between the woman and the priest happens, and what happens next, and where the church is doing well in these situations, and where the church still has a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, and it's interesting that you put it in the context of telling stories, because I wanted to make it very personal. I told the stories of a lot of specific real women who very generously opened up their stories to share with people, so that everybody could understand that this is not a theological problem. This is not some kind of abstract question, but this is real life that we're talking about.
Yeah, that really struck me as well, where you're diving into the lives of these women through their own words, like their own experiences there. Can you give us a sense of maybe what I noticed maybe was that there were two different kinds of stories that you told. One, really of hopeful stories where the church responded really well, priests responded well, or pastoral workers responded really well. Then those were really edifying. And then you told really honestly other hard stories of women being given really bad advice.
Right, and I wanted to make sure it was balanced, because I think that is an accurate picture. I mean, sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that, you know, if we're going to tell the truth, it's going to be ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case, you know. I mean, the truth is that a lot of the time priests do an excellent job of responding compassionately to women and telling them straight off, you do not have to live this way. Maybe you stood in front of the church, in front of a priest, with a man that you wanted to be your husband, but that doesn't mean that you're now his slave and that you have to put up with everything, because that's what Catholic marriage means.
Right.
There are a lot of priests who are very, very clear with women immediately that God doesn't want them to suffer. You know, God doesn't value marriage more than he values individual people. So that's something that in the more edifying stories that I was able to share.
Yeah.
I think that priests were very, they saw the woman in front of them as an individual suffering human being and responded in a very human way, rather than immediately retreating to, you know, canon law or something like that, which, by the way, canon law is actually on the side of the house, which some people don't realize. I don't mean to set it up as, you know, human as opposed to canon law, because the law is for humans, of course.
That's right. Simca, if I can ask, thanks for this, JD. As far as where that's getting mixed up, I think there's this beautiful line that you have from Father Lemieux. How is it loving that person to allow them to continue to degrade you? To love is to will the good for the other person. These are very serious decisions to work through. So there's this tension, I think, of like what people, this misperception that people have of what marriage is and what it actually is. And mm-hmm. I think that comes out in your article, so that this call to leave an abusive marriage really does recognize the truth of marriage in a way.
Right, exactly. I think sometimes in you know, I don't want to draw any caricatures of traditionalists versus progressives or something like that, but in any marriage, sometimes we can fall into the trap of thinking that either the marriage is important or I'm important and I have to make a choice.
Hmm.
And it's such a terrible, horrible misunderstanding, because the true Catholic view of marriage is that both spouses are equal in the sight of God, and both spouses have promised to will the good of each other, which is what love means.
Wow.
And you can't be in union with somebody else and can't love somebody else if you're abusing them or if you're allowing them to abuse you, because that's allowing them to live in a state of very serious mortal sin, and that's not a loving act. So Father Dennis, I was so glad that he was able to talk to me, because he's very, very clear on that, that the I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what you said, that you know, that it's not good for the soul of the other person to allow them to abuse you. You have to call them to account for it, and that's a way of loving them.
Yes.
And that's part of what you vow to do in marriage, is to love that person.
I think it's, Simca, it's such an important thing that you point out there, the meaning of love as it gets incarnated in a marriage, and how that, what the consequences of that are for these terrible situations of abuse in a marriage. The line that you have just says right there, which I thought is powerful, is we love them by holding them accountable for bad behavior.
Right.
Yeah. I just think this is, it's absolutely important to understand that accountability is a deep part of what love is, that actually brings the other person to the good.
Right. Right. And this, which is not to say that a good marriage doesn't involve self-sacrifice. Obviously it does. I mean, any married person, I've been married for over 20 years, and I can tell you it doesn't involve self-sacrifice. Oh, congratulations to my husband as well. You know?
To everyone involved.
Exactly. But I mean, and this is the funny thing, because, you know, I was talking to JD about why I actually wrote this story, and I'm a woman on the internet, and I'm a member of a lot of women's groups, and in some of the groups that I'm a member of, they do believe that, you know, if you're married, that means you just absolutely have to put up with everything, and you just have to be a punching bag and be a doormat, and this is the way that you're going to get into heaven, and
mm-hmm.
that, you know, this is dangerous nonsense. I'm also a member of a lot of women's groups where, you know, if your husband comes home and he's in a bad mood and snaps at you, they will say, well, don't put up with that. He's going to sleep on the couch tonight. You don't have to put up with that. And
wow.
and people will talk about, you know, calling the police on your husband or breaking up with your husband as if this is just some sort of, you know, you're just in it for your happiness and satisfaction. And that if not going your way, then, you know, you don't have to put up with that kind of thing. And I believe that if people would look closely at what the church actually teaches about marriage, that, you know, it would be obvious that both of those things are equally untrue and you know, disastrous to the human person, and especially when there's children involved.
Yeah, I think that this in this article is a great step in that direction and accomplishing that. I think I'm delighted that we published it and that we were actually talking about this and having a conversation about this. I think it's so important. And the other thing, you know, if there's going to be listeners out there that either are in this situation or maybe have a friend that's in that situation. So I guess my next question for you is, what does that, if you do know someone who's in an abusive marriage, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that came out, I was talking to a woman, the director of Catholics for Family Peace, that works with the USCCB to train priests to know how to respond to abusive situations in marriages. And what she says over and over again is recognize, respond, refer. And that's what she tells priests, and I think that's really good for you know, anybody else who has a friend in a situation like that. The first thing to do is to respond as compassionately as possible, you know, not leaping right to, like, well, what are we going to do about this, or trying to be all professional about it, but just respond as a human being with compassion. And then the second thing is to know your limitations and say, I'm not trained in this. Let me hook you up with somebody who is trained in this.
Really
and
important.
That is something that I've done in the past, and that's something that several priests have told me they absolutely do, because, you know, a priest is a lot of different things, but he's not, you know, an abuse hotline counselor or something. I mean, you know, you guys have enough on your plate. I understand this. So I think that one of the things that the O'Brien recommended was having the domestic violence hotline in the church bulletin, have it on speed dial at the parish office, so that you can say, that's horrible. You shouldn't have to put up with this. I'm so sorry this is happening to you. Here's the number of somebody who can tell you what to do next, or who can help you to assess how bad this is, or who can help you to assess how much danger you're actually in, or that kind of thing. So, you know, responding on a personal level and then understanding your personal limitations and not wading into something. I think another priest that I interviewed said that. He said priests get into trouble when they wade into situations that they're not equipped to handle, and that's true of anybody.
Simke, you had a number of great lines in here. You know, I found myself taking notes as a priest, like, okay,
yeah,
make sure this, I do this and set
me
up,
too,
set up for this. And I think one of the most important things to note is, I think especially for young priests who are new at the job, that they don't have to be expert in everything, and to admit
yeah.
when they are out of their depth, and then to ask for help.
It's hard to do sometimes.
And how important that is, especially in situations where we're talking about abuse, where they might not be well trained in how to understand the signs and signals that are going on here, and how to best help someone in that situation, and how important it is to refer. I think it's so crucial. They come to you for pastoral advice, but it's okay to say, I don't have all the answers. I need to pass you off to someone that can help you.
Yeah, I mean, you think about Moses in the desert. You know, that was his problem. He was trying to do everything, and it was completely overwhelming for him. And basically, God had to tell him, you have to outsource some of this. It's okay to outsource.
No, I think that's really important. I think another thing too. I think that it applies in a strong sense for the priests, because frequently they're a point of contact where someone comes in and they're looking for advice. They see them as a figure of expertise in some sense in the faith, and you know, if they're married in the church, then they go to the priest for this type of stuff. But they're also probably have a number of friends, lay friends and family that are involved in this, and they might need advice from that. JD was talking about that before as well.
Yeah, I think I think that's an important thing to talk about too. You know, in the article, there's so many so many testimonies. It's of people, of women who are in this situation. I imagine men may also be in a similar situation in terms of not physical but emotional abuse that you sort of spell out in there. But if you are a lay Catholic that's listening and you don't have that, you know, maybe your friend is in such a situation and isn't ready to talk about it. Like, what's the next step?
Yeah, I think that one thing that I kept on coming across was that when women finally did reach the point of realizing this marriage is abusive, I do not want to be in this marriage anymore, I don't think I should be in this marriage anymore, it was often a series of revelations. It wasn't that one person said something and suddenly it all became clear to them and they knew exactly what they had to do. In many cases, what happened was that it was a lot of people saying something that stuck with them, and that eventually there was sort of a chorus of these things telling them that, you know, that they were important and that God loved them and that God didn't want to see them suffer and that there was an alternative and that they wouldn't be sinning by leaving. So I think that strangely enough, even though I did come across some stories of priests telling women, you know, God, this is God's will for you, you made a vow, you have to stay, or, you know, he's not hitting you, therefore it's not abuse, that kind of thing. You know, there was definitely some bad advice from priests. I think there's a lot more bad advice coming from lay people, unfortunately. And it's very, very hard to keep your eye on the ball when you're in a group. You know, group dynamics are very, very powerful, and when you're in a group of people telling you, this is what marriage is supposed to be, and if you don't want to sin, then don't you be breaking up that marriage. It's very, very hard to think clearly when you have a whole chorus of people telling you that. So I think that this is something that takes a lot of courage, and probably revealing too much about how much time I spend online in women's groups. But nevertheless, this is something that I've learned. It takes a lot of courage to be the one that stands up and says, hold on, everybody. Everybody's saying this, but actually, have you thought of that? So I think that's something that lay people can do, even if they're not, you know, knowing your limits and knowing that you're not trained in something, knowing that you're not an expert, just being the lone voice that's willing to say, hold on a second, that doesn't sound right. And that's something that can make a big difference to somebody who's really desperately wishing that even one person would say, hold on a second, you know, there's another point of view here. That can be extremely powerful.
Well, and Simke, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but you are being that one person now. And I'm sure there are others. I know there are others, right? So I'm not trying to just put you on the spot there, but you're doing this right now and trying to put a voice out there to be the kind of person who can stand up and say, this is not acceptable. We want to revision this. This is not what marriage means. This is not what love looks like. How has that been received by others? How has that been for you to try to stand up and do something like that?
Yeah, it's been it's been an overwhelming wave of gratitude, I would say, since the article came out. There's a lot of people who said they wish that, you know, they could hear more of this thing from Catholic circles. I think that it's not a matter of that the church needs to change. It's a matter of that the church needs to be better about promoting the point of view that it already has.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if we see what canon law says, if we see what the USCCB's statement, what's it called, When I Call for Help,
mm-hmm.
it's all in there, and it's very good stuff, but it just needs more promotion. So I was hoping that it would, one of my goals was to write an article that would be very shareable, that would be engaging and shareable, so that people would be able to point their friends toward it. If they came across a friend who was in a situation that they weren't sure about, they could say, well, here's this article, maybe this will strike a chord with you, or something like that. And that's why we were careful to include a lot of you know, specific practical, you know, hotlines and resources that you could go to, so that you could, it was meant to be a starting point, so that people would understand that they're not alone, because abuse is, you know, by design very, very isolating.
Are there stories or conversations, feedback that you've received that's really sticking with you in your own prayer?
I have been in contact with some of the women since I wrote the article. At least one woman is actually, you know, she's still in that marriage. She is one who got bad advice from her priest. He told her that, you know, this is God's will for you, and you need to stay, and you need to just pray for your husband. And she felt that, you know, she understood that it was just basically one man's opinion, and yet the weight of authority that he had as a priest was so powerful that even though she knew objectively that it probably wasn't very good advice, it's really hard to shake that kind of thing when you hear it from a priest, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that puts a lot of pressure on priests. I'm sure priests are already aware of how much a single comment or thought can stay with somebody.
But that's important for you to tell even that story, so that priests who read this understand the consequences of such bad advice.
Yeah.
And are aware of it.
Yeah. And truly, it's, I don't know a lot of priests, and this is something that was interesting to me. I carry my own prejudices with me, and I assumed that this was going to be a matter of, you know, more traditionalist priests would be more in favor of, you know, sticking it out and suffering and offering it up, and more progressive priests would be in favor of, you know, being strong and being courageous and getting the heck out of there. And that didn't necessarily, that's not exactly where the line fell, and it was, you know, I took that as a teachable moment for myself. I think it has less to do with theological preferences or predilections, that's not quite the right word, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it has more to do with how willing you are to be engaged with the person directly in front of you.
Mm.
You know, are you more concerned with ideology and abstractions, or are you more concerned with the individual directly in front of you? And the priests who took very seriously their charge of being concerned with the person directly in front of them were the ones who were able to actually help women. And the ones who got more caught up in theories were less helpful.
Simca, I want to ask you about this story from Rebecca. I mean, and we changed, you changed all the names so that to make sure that the women were protected and they would feel comfortable sharing their stories with our readers. But with Rebecca, as she's named in the article, she did take that decision to honor the first priority, to keep herself safe. And then she was judged by her community afterwards. So she was ostracized after she did go through the divorce and separate from her abusive husband. And she says, if you're feeling judgment and condemnation from Catholics, but getting healing outside the church, why would you stay? I think that that's something important to ask about, to talk about. Is so there's a community obligation here too about where are we called, what are we called to do as lay Catholics in such situations?
Yeah, I think that's extremely important because I think a lot of the time when people condemn somebody else, it's because they're trying to sort of insulate themselves. They feel this is something that we see a lot, you know, when this is not going to sound related, but when they had to kill the gorilla in the zoo, when the little boy fell into the
Harambe.
And everybody was so angry at the mother and saying, I would never have let that happen. I'm a good mother. I would have held on tighter. I would have gone in after him. I never would have let that happen. And there was so much anger that descended on the head of that mother.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of where that comes from is people wanting, they're angry at somebody else rather than admitting that they themselves can certainly make mistakes and have poor judgment and do things, you know, things, you're not safe. Things can happen to you. And I think a lot of the time it's people's fear about their own marriages that turn them against somebody who's in a publicly failing marriage. I think this is what feeds a lot of the condemnation that people will have toward somebody who's had to leave an abusive marriage, because it's easier to say, well, that's what a bad marriage looks like, and that person did something wrong, rather than to look at our own marriages and say, well, what's really the state of my own marriage? What's the state of my own soul? What's the state of my relationship with God? You know, it's much easier to ostracize somebody and to identify yourself as a Catholic by saying, I'm not like her, rather than looking at Christ and saying, how much am I like that?
You know? Right.
So I think that, for a lot of people, a big part of their identity as Catholics is a very external thing.
Hmm.
And when there's anything that messes up that external picture of happy families and lots of children and homeschooling and, you know, daily mass and all the things that are pretty fairly easy to set up on the outside, when you invest a lot in that, you have a very, you can have an almost violent response towards somebody who breaks that image.
Yeah.
And really the way to protect the group and to protect your own identity is just to cast them out. And that's what happened to the woman that I named Rebecca in the article.
Simca, we're really grateful both for the piece that you've written for us. We hope it will do a lot of good. It's already being shared very widely, and I hope that, you know, the feedback you've gotten from people only increases. I want to say thank you to you for joining us also here on the radio show.
Yeah, thank you so much, and I appreciate having the platform. I felt like it was an important message, so I'm really grateful for the opportunity to put it out there.
No, you're doing important work for the church here.
We're very grateful, and for anyone that's listening, if you want to read the article in its entirety or find out more of the information that's in there, there's a great many stories and a lot of information that you can share with other people. That's americamagazine.org/serious.
So this has been like a really interesting conversation for me, I have to say. One of the things that I wanted to just check with you guys real quick is this idea of inner and outer here. So we've got this sense of what's going on in this this own inner processing, whether or not this marriage is just this sense of you can take care of this in your own inner interiority versus, no, you really need to act on this. And I think really our faith is, it is a both and. Like, we're a both and faith. We want to be, yes, interiorly deep and yes, interiorly free. But look, freedom also is manifested exteriorly. We can't just have this being bound there into a place of brokenness.
No, you're going to have, I mean, we start the Mass with a penitential rite. We're all sinners.
Yeah.
So we need to start and recognize that's the place we start from and not be worried or fearful about acknowledging our own failings. And then so we can be honest and seek the help, get the referrals. You know, admit our own limitations.
It's the place we start from in the church. It's the place we end today. This has been America This Week on Sirius XM 129, the Catholic channel. You can find all the pieces we've talked about today on americamagazine.org/Sirius. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM. And tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic channel, Sirius XM 129.